Goody. Talk Radio.
MacGyver this stuff pretty well. I think I've got it going. I'm going to be smashing on it a little bit as we're getting the show going. I apologize again. I am Thomas Watts, and we'd like to welcome you to another episode of BAMS Radio. I think we've got Carrie on. Carrie, can you hear me?
I can hear you great. Thomas, how are you, sir?
A little stressed out because Bird's having trouble with Skype and having trouble getting into the show, and then Skype blew up on me, and it was a crazy, 10 minutes there, but I think I've got it stable for now. So I'm about to bring up chat. I know it's a little late, but we'll have that going. But how are you this evening, Carrie? I'm glad to finally be on and have this settled.
Well, I'm glad to be back, and I know I was only on for a few minutes last week, and I'm glad to be here for the full hour of the show tonight. A lot to talk about. I don't even really know where to start. There's so much to talk about, really. But hey, it should be a great hour. Hoping that Bird will join us. Gosh, we got softball going on right now. We have baseball and basketball both played last night. We have women's basketball actually winning a game tonight in the SEC tournament outside of Atlanta over Mississippi State. We have a recruit from North Gwinnett High School, north of Atlanta, who has named Alabama his leader, that plans to visit this weekend, a 2014 defensive lineman. Gosh, just tons and tons and tons of things going on, Thomas. I don't really know where to start. Where should I start? Well, maybe I'll keep talking. We have softball going on right now in Tuscaloosa. The Florida Gators are playing the Alabama Crimson Tide at Rhodes Stadium. Alabama ranked 1 in one poll and 2 in the other. Should be 1 in both, actually. But Alabama has lost a 4-2 lead, and Florida has taken a 5-4 advantage over the Crimson Tide, with Bama batting in the bottom of the sixth. The Tide has 6 outs to work with, assuming they can hold the Gators scoreless the rest of the way. Last night, the Alabama baseball team lost in Montgomery again for the 5th year in a row to the Auburn Tigers in what is called the Capital City Classic. Final last night was 4-3 Auburn. The men's basketball team came up 4 points short after a huge rally late, was just not enough, and lost in Oxford, Mississippi, 97-93. They now sit on the bubble, at best on the bubble, of the NCAA tournament. They have to beat Georgia Saturday to have even a puncher's chance, and then they're probably going to need to win at least 2 in Nashville, and that's assuming they get the double bye. And in recruiting news, North Gwinnett High School defensive lineman Dante Sawyer, a 4-star who probably projects as a Wallace Gilberry type of end at the next level, has named the University of Alabama his leader. There's another North Gwinnett High School player already on the Alabama roster, backup right tackle Austin Shepherd. So there may be 2 North Gwinnett Bulldogs playing for the Tide in a couple of years. Only time will tell, but Mr. Sawyer, who hails from the Sewanee, Georgia area, will be visiting the Capstone this weekend. So, Thomas, your thoughts on that big blow of info I just gave up?
Well, my head's still spinning, I have to say. But the good news is I have managed to get Bird on with us. So, Bird, can you hear me? Are we good?
We're good, man. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm so glad everything's fixed. You can't even know.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you're there, because I sit for 20 minutes trying to get the show to come up, and maybe it's me, man. Maybe it's part of the meds I'm taking. I don't know. Anyway, it sure is good to be on BAMS tonight. It's Wednesday night, feeling good about Bama sports, except for, oh, my God, that basketball game. Guys, talk to me. They're slow motion. It's like living and dying in 3/4 time, and a nickel and a hot dog goes to either one of you that knows the name of the album and the artist that album came from.
Well, you got me on that one.
No idea.
Oh, come on. It's Jimmy Buffett. It's one of his early ones.
Oh, he graduated from my high school, too. I feel kind of sad now.
Yeah, you live down in his neck of the woods. Anyway, yeah, good to be on the show tonight, guys. And, wow, you know, softball is trucking along. Gymnastics is trucking along. I haven't kept up with the golf team. I guess that's terrible on me. Looks like we are set up for another moribund year in baseball. Gosh, we have beaten the football horse to the point that I don't know how much more you can beat a horse with football, but you know, we've got the Fab Four behind us, and hopefully we're all settled down. So I'm going to sit back and let you guys go, and then toss me the ball every once in a while. So,
absolutely. Kerry, I have to apologize. Halfway through your massive info spiel, my Skype blew up for about, 35 seconds. So I want to ask you just your impressions from the Ole Miss game. If you gave them already, just reiterate for me, catch me up. I know I personally, I didn't watch all of the game. When Alabama was down 16 at the start of the second half, or however much they were, I kind of tuned out. I was glad that Bama rallied, but it just wasn't enough, and Ole Miss is not a good enough team to be counted as a good loss. We can also talk about Florida, which, I mean, I would kill for a low post game for this team. That's about where I am right now on that. Anyway, what you got, Kerry? I apologize.
Well, I did watch the entire game last night. The problem was digging too big of a hole early. And the other problem was, and this was a lesser problem, it sounds like an excuse, but the fact is Marshall Henderson should have been thrown out of the ball game twice.
Yep. Yep,
and it didn't happen either time because of gutless, madless refereeing on the road in the SEC. Once again, the opposing team shot about 3 times more free throws than Alabama did, Listen, no excuse for the whole Alabama dug itself in the first half. You got to come out with a little bit more fire in your belly than they did that first half. And they played great the last, I guess, 3 minutes. I think they closed the game with 23 points in the last 3 minutes. People were hitting threes left and right. Everybody did a great job padding their stats, but they never got it closer than 4 points because Ole Miss, which is just an okay free-throw shooting team, nailed them like their lives depended on it in the last 3 minutes every time Alabama fouled them. And the net result of all this is that Alabama did some damage to itself last night in regard to making the NCAA tournament. Most people that have more sense than me, feel that Alabama probably has to win the SEC tournament now to make the NCAA tournament. I'm one of those that believes that, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but I believe that Alabama can beat Georgia and then with the correct draw, get a couple of decent wins at Nashville over people like Missouri and Kentucky. And then even if it loses to Florida in the finals, I think Alabama could still get off the bubble. That's a lot of ground to dig between now and Sunday. That's Sunday week, by the way. This Saturday, Georgia comes in for a 3 o'clock game. And Georgia has a very poor record this year. But Georgia is a team, guys, that has actually been jobbed by the refs worse than Alabama this year. Just in the last 10 days or so, the officials have taken 2 games away from Georgia that they literally should have won. And they were games that if the officials had made the correct calls, it would have actually helped Alabama's RPI. So Mark Fox, who I still say is separated from birth with Ernie Johnson Jr., continues to struggle at Georgia. They are in no danger of even being an NIT team. It should be a win for Alabama Saturday. One would think it's senior day for Andrew Steele, the lone senior on this Alabama team. Georgia has one of the best players in the entire conference in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He's outstanding. He's kind of like a more consistent Alonzo G. And I say that knowing the fact that Alonzo G is currently starting for the Cleveland Cavaliers. But Alabama's going to have to play some good defense, better than they did last night, at least in the first half, Saturday. But Alabama should win. Alabama has not lost an SEC home game this year. What's killing Alabama right now is those 3 losses to Dayton and Mercer and Tulane. Even though Mercer has finally worked its way into the top 150 in the RPI and they're probably going to win their conference, it's still not considered a good loss. And I think there's a chance Alabama could get in if the right teams lose and Alabama wins Saturday and then wins the Friday and the Saturday in Nashville against quality opponents, for example, Kentucky and Missouri, both very beatable on a neutral site, by the way. I'm hoping, against hope, that the pluck and grit that Alabama showed in the last 3 minutes last night will carry over to Saturday and then also into Nashville. It's very important. I cannot stress the importance of Alabama getting one of those double byes. And if they win Saturday, they will. Because they've got all the tiebreakers against the people they're competing for second place in the SEC. Florida obviously is going to win the SEC, but there are other teams in the mix like Missouri, like Kentucky. And although Missouri has a tiebreaker over Bama, Kentucky does not. So if Bama wins Saturday, the worst it could finish in the regular season would be 3rd, and that would assure them a double bye. I've said all that to say this. There's about a 95% chance that Alabama's going to be in the NIT this year. I didn't mean to build up a bunch of hope there. I was just trying to give a possible scenario that might get them off the bubble. But I'm certainly no Joe Lenardi, and I'm certainly no Jerry Palm or his 5 sisters.
Well done. I haven't looked at it as much either, but I do. I think this is an NIT team. I like Bama basketball. The guard play, I've said it once, I'll say it again, the guard play has been good, but it's just the lack of low post game. I wish you could smash Nick Jacobs and Musa Gay into one player, and then you'd have a scary good team. But I oscillate between if I'm annoyed with Anthony Grant and should he be fired, and should you just kind of ride out the storm? I think I've fallen. Last week I was very disappointed with the LSU loss, particularly with some of the coaching choices down the stretch. But I think I might jump back on the give him one more year bandwagon slash I can live with this. I don't know. I've been, frankly, blown away. Well, not to steal your thunder, Kerry, I've been blown away by some of the mock drafts. And if we want to go there, this is an interesting can of worms. With the proposed trade, no trades in the NFL are official until the start of the official NFL year as of March the 12th, so next Tuesday, if I can add 7 correctly to 5. The 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs are trading. The Niners are giving the Chiefs Alex Smith for their second-round pick this year and a conditional second-round pick next year. Well, interesting story there, because now the Chiefs, the number one overall pick, they won't take a quarterback because they've got their hopefully franchise player. Well, they were looking at Texas A&M left tackle Luke Jokel. Well, they just franchised their left tackle, Brandon Albert. So you would think that Luke Jokel would be off the board. I'm starting to see some mock drafts pushing D. Milner as the number one overall pick. I personally think that's a little bit of a reach, even after his combine performance. But you want to talk about a feather not only in his cap, but in the program's cap. Just one more thing for Nick Saban to hold over recruits. What do y'all think about that? Bird, go. You haven't talked much yet. I'm making you talk.
Well, you know, I think who knows? I mean, what you're going to see is teams that need the player the worst, and you can already Kansas City's already basically shot their wad. I mean, they're making their trades, they're trading away their birthright, they're giving up the golden fleece and all that sort of thing, trying to fix their team overnight. And I give them a lot of credit, but you know, to see say D. Milner, but it'd be the number one pick out of this draft. Man, that'd make my head explode.
Well, what about you, Kerry?
Don't really follow it that closely. I'm going to bow out of this part of the conversation.
No, I understand completely. And it's, again, this is a mock draft that let me preface this, what I'm about to say. This is going to change. Draft orders are going to change in between now and the draft because of pro days, because of injuries, because of free agency. But it's just a little interesting conversation because Kansas City, like you said, Bird, they're moving very quickly in a lot of different directions to do
a lot of different things. They're not waiting at all. And, I mean, there's not going to be any – as far as the number one pick is it's certainly not going to be through Kansas City because they're trading that away.
They're going to keep the number one overall pick. They're trading their first – their like the 34th pick, which is the second pick in the second round. And the way this draft goes, there's not a lot of difference between, say, the number 15 and the number 34.
Right, right. So, basically, I mean, they're making their moves right now, and it'll be, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot now, as far as the combine's concerned, have you guys been keeping up with it and how the guys have done, the kids that have shown up at the combine?
Yeah, I kept up with it. I wrote a couple of things for Bama Hammer about it last week, and the aggregate is obviously the longer season for Alabama actually had a negative effect because Alabama was practicing until January the 7th. Half of the young men invited to the combine weren't able to participate for a variety of injury reasons, and even some, like D. Milner, couldn't do a full workout. D. Milner, example, has a torn labrum and will not be working out again until the draft. So this was kind of his chance to hang his hat. You know, this is his time to set the marks, such as it were. So that might have been a negative. I mean, obviously, you're not going to convince these kids that playing later, i.e., playing for another national championship, is a bad thing. But there was some attrition there. Alabama's pro day will be interesting to see because a lot of the injuries will have had time to heal. And the kids you expect to go through full workouts will post their numbers, and you'll see a lot of moving and shaking. I have seen drafts where Alabama has five mock drafts, excuse me, where Alabama has five in the first round. Blip has, you know, done the happy dance that Eddie Lacy might go to the Green Bay Packers. So I think I've actually seen Eddie Lacy to the Steelers as well, which is very interesting because Rashard Mendenhall is heading out, and I know the Steelers are your team, Bird, so you might get a woohoo out of that.
That's a big woohoo.
it's going to be a good it's going to be a good time come draft day. I think Walter Football has the first five rounds mocked, and there are seven Alabama kids going. So even the later rounds will be fun to watch. And I mean, again, for young, I'll speak for the younger Bama fan base. Enjoy it. You know, you can throw a draft party and actually cheer as opposed to wondering who the hell is this guy from the Central Michigan nowhere team. And that's not to demean Eric Fisher, fabulous left tackle, but he's not a guy that you would know about unless you just absorb football on a subatomic level like I do, which
this
I would recommend.
Just a rhetorical question, Thomas, but you know, when it rolls around to draft time, and we keep up with the SEC pretty good here on BAMS, do you cheer just as loudly when any SEC, and at this time, as far as I'm concerned, the gloves are off and the kids, you know, good on you. I don't care who you played for, whether it be Tennessee, who I think is accursed, or Auburn, who I absolutely loathe. But when it comes to draft time, I'm pretty happy. I'm doing kind of a little happy dance, SEC dance, and good for you, and good luck as you go on with your career into your second part of your life there.
I don't hold any ill will for the school that you played for as a collegiate athlete. I think it's hilarious that I've seen some mock drafts that Chance Wormack could be taken by the Carolina Panthers and be blocking for Cam Newton. That's kind of mind-blowing to me. But, you know, going off your point, if you're just a pure cheering for the SEC fan, you're going to have a great first round because you'll probably end up yanking, looking at something like half of the total picks, like 13 to 16 picks will be SEC teams at a minimum. Again,
so it's going to be happy dance time.
Yeah, it'll be consistent happy dance time. Mel Kiper, I promise on draft day, Mel Kiper will spew whatever he's going to spew about the SEC at least four or five times. You know, the SEC speed or whatever he's going to say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's fine. He's made a living off of talking about the SEC, and good for Mel Kiper. Yeah, Kerry, you know, I watched the game. Were you actually – you weren't at the game, were you, over in Ole Miss?
Oh, no.
You watched it on from the comfort of Casa de Kerry like I did.
Yeah.
I watched the two times that Marshall – I'm going to switch back to basketball, if that's okay. I was blown away, as you were, that the kid was not – I mean, absolutely just dumped out of the game. What in the world is going on? Why was he not dumped out of the game? Because he hogtied and tackled, was it Cooper?
It was Randolph.
Randolph, Levi. Welcome. Wake up.
No, it was Levi, yeah. It's really the first one I could sort of see because it was a jump ball type, loose ball type situation. The second one, when he just basically did a takedown, how he got away with that, I have no idea. And even if he wasn't ejected, he should have been a flagrant one, two shots in the ball.
Absolutely.
And those kind of things matter in a four-point loss. You know, but, you know, there's absolutely no excuse for the way that Alabama played in the first half.
No. I'm not letting that off on the refs at all.
It did stink to see the things that Henderson got away with. He's just not a good person. somebody told me, I didn't even know this because I don't follow Ole Miss basketball that closely, but somebody told me that in his past he had spent something like 25 days in jail. I don't even know what for. But after watching that game, I'm thinking it might have been some kind of assault. But he got away with it last night. And the reason is that the SEC referees are just, when they're calling a home game, they just tend to be gutless.
Well,
just absolutely gutless.
if you got three of them there, I mean, there was a guy standing right on top of that play. And, you know, again, I'm not going to eviscerate the refs because I thought that, you know, whenever you're playing on the other team's court, there's going to be home cooking. I mean, I've just come to learn that over the years. And I don't care if it's NBA, college basketball, high school basketball, whatever, you're going to get home cooking. And but stuff like that, I mean, that was absolutely flagrant. And the kid should have been bumped from the game. And I sat up in my chair. And then I jumped up and started cursing and running around. And Mrs. Bird was going, "Hey, are you sick? What's wrong with you?" He was like, "No, I just got pissed off at a call or a non-call." Anyway, well, Alabama basketball is still painful for me to watch. Now, I'm going to pose something again. Is Anthony Grant a genius or is he a complete moron? Because I'm starting to think that, I mean, he's getting competitive play out of what I would consider a very mediocre bunch of players. This is a moribund best. Group of athletes that I'm watching Alabama field right now, or are the athletes better than what the coach is getting out of them? Is he an idiot? So, I mean, that would be the question for you guys as well as the question for the listeners out there. I don't know whether to be absolutely gleeful in the job that he's done because he's got such crappy talent, or is the talent crappy because he sucks as a coach?
Well, I certainly don't think he's a moron, Bird. I don't think he's a genius either. If he was a genius, they'd be going to the tournament every year. He rolled the dice and lost on thinking he was going to have great injury luck this year by choosing not to fill his roster with all the large scholarships he had available. I can tell you the logic on it. You'll probably chew it up and spit it right back in my face. But the logic on him not signing, say, some JUCO 6'9", 235 guy that averaged 8 points and 7 rebounds, the logic on it was he looks at every scholarship as gold. And if he sees guys down the road that he thinks he needs to hold those scholarships for, he tends to do that. He will not sign somebody just so he can say he has all 13 of his scholarships filled. He's not going to ever do it. Now, you know, he didn't know that Charles Hackerson and Ben Edlund weren't going to come back this year when he was making his spring recruiting decisions. He might have had an inkling, but he didn't know for sure. So, you know, theoretically, he went into the late recruiting period and only went after one person, and he got that person, and that person was a five-star player who has shown up in Tuscaloosa and looked like a two-star player. And that is because apparently whatever division of basketball – Devontae Pollard played in Mississippi is apparently extremely piss poor. I never saw any of the games he played in high school, but he put up astronomical stats in high school and even acquitted himself very well in the Mississippi-Alabama All-Star game. He acquitted himself very well. Had, I don't know, a double-double anyway, at around 20, 25 points. But something happened when he got to Tuscaloosa. He began to play against players that were also five stars, that had played for better AAU programs and had played for better high school competition and had been in the weight room for a while. And the poor kid is lost.
He's totally lost.
It's like watching the new ball, Bird. He just kind of wanders around out there, and every now and then he'll get up and maybe get a dunk stick back or something. He has improved defensively. I'm going to give him credit. He's starting to get some rebounds. But his offensive game is just non-existent right now. His confidence is shot. He can't buy a three-pointer even when he's wide open. He just doesn't have much of a post-up game, even though he's being forced to play power forward. He played small forward in high school. In that way, you could compare it to the situation that Gerald Wallace found himself in the one year he was at Alabama, but he was a much more advanced player than Pollard. When he was forced to play power forward, he was still able to average like 10 points and 8 rebounds and a couple blocks. We're not getting that from Devontae. We may in the future. There's even a decent chance of it. I will share something I was told by an Alabama coach, assistant coach, who shall remain nameless. But what Devontae needs to do is he needs to dedicate himself once this season is over to being the gym rat of all time. And yes, the weights are important, conditions important, but he needs to get in there and play every pickup game against his teammates he can possibly play all summer. He needs to be lacing them up. He needs to be going through several pair of shoes this summer. And because Bird, the physical ability is there. Yeah, the guy can jump out of the gym. He's a fairly intelligent player, but he's not really picking up our offense too well, apparently. If he is, then we're just not going to him, and we're not going to him because I don't think that we trust him to be a scorer yet because he hasn't shown he can be. I think by the time Devontae leaves Alabama, he's going to have a pretty good resume. But I've said all that to say this. Grant gambled in the late period and only took one man, a five-star. The best available guy that was left that didn't sign in the fall, you know, he got him. He got him for Alabama, and people thought, well, this guy's going to come in and help Alabama win some games, and he hasn't done that. He will down the road. I'm very confident of that. Now, here's some other things Grant couldn't have anticipated when he chose to go with the 10-man roster berth. He didn't anticipate the recurring injuries to Andrew Steele that cost him three games in December. He did not anticipate losing his best big man. And let me tell you, another Alabama assistant coach told me this. Carl Engstrom had won the center job, Bird. He had won it. They were going to go with four guards all year and Carl in the middle. And Carl had won that job. And then he goes up to Cincinnati and he gets hurt. And all of a sudden, Nick Jacobs and Musa Gay, one who can play offense only and one who can play defense only, have got to split the job. That was not the deal. Carl had improved so much from last year to this year that he was going to be able to give them 7 points a game and maybe seven rebounds and three or four blocks. They were going to get that from Carl, even in the SEC. And if Carl had not gotten hurt and if Andrew had not had the problems he had, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But I've said all that to say this. Anthony Grant is 100%, 1,000% safe this year. Now, if we're having this conversation next year and Carl has been healthy all year and the two freshman big men have come in and stayed healthy and he's found himself a combination guard, by which I mean someone who could play the one and the two, which he is considering several for the late period, if all those things have happened and we're still having this conversation, I do not think that he'll be safe, okay? But he's going to get another year, and I think the parameters will be that you have, A, got to make the tournament, and, B, you really need to win a game in the tournament. And by the tournament, I mean the big dance, because it's a long shot for him to make it this year, especially if they don't make it to Sunday in Nashville, which I sort of doubt they will.
No.
But to answer your original question, he's neither moron nor genius. He's just a blue-collar, defensive-minded, basically kind of a Gene Stallings of basketball. That's
I agree.
Who he is. And the reason I say that is there was a lot of times, Bird, that I would walk out of Legion Field or Bryant Denny with a 7 or 8 point win over a Tulane or Mississippi State, not really feeling like I won the football game. And it happened for 7 years. And Coach Stallings, God love him, averaged 10 wins a year in those 7 years. But that's the kind of basketball coach. And Coach Stallings, he had to hire Randy Roth because Coach Stallings was not really into recruiting. Grant is into recruiting. Maybe later on we can talk about some of the top 2014 basketball prospects. Grant is working them hard. He's working a couple of juniors that, you know, be seniors next year very hard. He's established a relationship with the player that I consider the best sophomore in the state, and he's established a relationship with the player that I know for a fact is the best freshman in the state, probably the best player in the state. Grant has gone out of his way to establish relationships with all these kids, going up to their games, in one case going to some practices at Winona. So he is into recruiting. That's the difference in him and Stallings. But as far as his philosophy and his game day coaching decisions and that kind of thing. I mean, who among us, Bird, can forget Coach Stallings not going for two against Florida in 1994? But, you know, and who among us can forget Coach Anthony Grant calling an inexplicable timeout last year in round one of the NCAA tournament, whereas if he just lets them play, somebody's probably going to hit a shot to win the game for him. But he called a timeout and tried to get too technical and, too NBA-ish. He out-coached himself last year against St. Mary's. Those kind of things are troubling. That being said, he's about to become the first Alabama coach to win 20 games in a season for 3 years in a row since Wimp Sanderson did it in the 1992 season. That's a long time to not have three 20-year wins in a row. And he's about to do it because I'm pretty convinced he's going to beat Georgia Saturday. Or if he doesn't, he's going to win one in Nashville. He's going to have 20 wins this year regardless. And certainly they are on the bubble. I mean, you can paint it any way you want to paint it, but they're going to have to win at least three more in a row to get off the bubble, and it might take four. It might take winning the tournament. But I don't think he's a moron, Bird. Not at all. He's just a blue-collar, hard-working guy. He's got his way of doing things, and that's the way it is.
Well, again, maybe it is a testament to the coach and that he's able to take talent that may be less than luminary and eke out a 20-game season. But I'll tell you what, it's just some of the ugliest basketball, and maybe, again, it's because of the talent that he's got. It may be that you do the two-headed hydra between Nick Jacobs and Musa Gay, and one kid is offense and one kid is defense. But, I mean, Musa looked so bad last night, guys. I can't see that any time he was on the floor, he wasn't a detriment to the team, because any time the ball would swing to Alabama on offense, we were playing 4-on-5. It's simple as that. He was just
You know what? He's number two in the SEC in block shots. And I'm going to tell you something else. The officials in the Southeastern Conference have got it in for Musa Gay. You weren't with us last week, but the brief 5 minutes I was on the show, I pointed out to Blip, and I don't know if he may relay this to you. They sat Musa down about a week ago, Bird, and they went over his last 50 fouls through the LSU game that were called in conference play. And I'm here to tell you, Bird, that on 10 of those fouls, he didn't touch anybody.
It happened last night. He got called last night on a call that he just looked at the ref. I mean, he threw his hands up and turned around and walked off. And it was,
they got
it was
in
on
for
that.
He's got that reputation.
Yeah.
And when you get that reputation, any kind of close call is going to go against you. And it's not that they think that he's a bad kid. They just think he's a hacker. But I'm telling you, that's 10 out of 50 that he didn't even touch anybody.
Well, but again, that's where the coach has got to have a referee's ass and basically jump onto the court, blow up if he has to, get thrown out of the damn gymnasium. But the referees need to understand that the coach is doing what he needs to do to basically protect his kids. And if the referees are out of control in that regard, then the coach has got to step in and have him some referee ass. Be spitting and shitting zebra the next day, gentlemen.
Well, yes, I agree with that. But in a tight game like we've been playing, a technical can make the difference.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm passionate about basketball, Kerry, and I know that you've got a great basketball mind. That's why I'm licking up the milk that you're serving this evening.
Well, let me tell you something else that happened. I shared this with Thomas and Blip. You'll recall that we lost the LSU game because we allowed ourselves to blow a 10-point lead in the last 2 minutes and 52 seconds.
Sir.
That's what you know. What you don't know is that on one of those occasions, while they were making that run they made, that 10-0 run to put it in overtime, on one of the occasions, just prior to Johnny O'Brien III scoring a basket over Nick Jacobs, Alabama sent Musa Gay to the table in plenty of time to check in. And when the officials on the floor checked with the LSU guy running the scorer's table, they were falsely told he didn't get up there in time. So he was not allowed in the game to guard O'Brien, and O'Brien scored over Jacobs. That's two of those ten. And I can tell you that all this has been communicated to Gerald Boudreau. Gerald is the former SEC official who is now the head of officials for the Southeastern Conference. It goes all the way back to the Tennessee game with the no-call on Lacey at the buzzer. A tape of that game was sent, not just that call, but seven or eight other calls that went against Alabama. A tape was sent to Gerald Boudreau in the office in Birmingham by Alabama. That's one thing about the fact that they digitally record all these games. The guy they got that cuts the tape up for them can pull anything, anytime, and send it. And it's happened at least once. And I'm 99% sure the situation in Baton Rouge where Moose was not allowed in was communicated to the office. Grant actually finally went public in a press conference before the Ole Miss game, talking about the disparity of free throws on the road, like 3-1 by the home team when we're the road team. Didn't have any effect last night. But last night we found ourselves in a situation where we had to foul the entire last 3 minutes. So the disparity last night really wasn't as bad until the last 3 minutes. But that was the first time he said anything in the media about it. But trust me, he has sent videotapes to Gerald Boudreau, the head of SEC basketball officiating. So the conference office is aware.
But Kerry, isn't Boudreau a Cajun name? Isn't that from somebody from down in Louisiana? Part of the Boudreaus down there in Tammany Parish.
Gerald is an African American. I don't know where he's originally from.
He's from Tammany Parish. I knew it. Part of the crawfish eating Boudreaus from down there. It's a conspiracy against Alabama. That's all I have to say.
Well. It certainly hasn't gone their way. On road games, they certainly should have won in Knoxville. Refereeing had nothing to do with the loss on Auburn. That was all on Grant and the players. That was totally inexcusable. The loss in Baton Rouge had to do with officiating. You know, last night had to do with officiating. So that's Knoxville, Baton Rouge, Oxford. That's three games Alabama could have won. That's Alabama's fault they lost in Auburn. Okay?
Yep.
But
They kill themselves at Ole Miss. You cannot go to sleep as long as they go to sleep in the stretches that they do. Letting a team jump out and get a 6-point run on you is one thing. Letting a team jump out and get a 14-15-point run on you and then just literally, you know, let's just blindfold the players and say, now, you know, just start shooting the basket because it's obvious you're not looking at the damn hoop. I mean, it just clankety clank, clank, clank. And I just cringe. I cringe every time somebody shoots the ball. And, you know, I don't see a pure shooter out there. Why can't we find a fast white kid like that Marshall Crenshaw?
Shall we talk about a couple of 2014 kids?
Hey, man, let's get past this. I hate to say debacle. Debacle is if we won two and we lost 20, but. You know, it's just, God, it's like I'm getting my tooth filled every week, every time I watch him play, without a Novocaine. So please, give us what's coming up. Give us what's in the cupboard or the larder and lay it on me, brother. Make me a happy man tonight.
Well, I only have about 9 more minutes. Before we get into 2014 basketball recruiting, I do want to report, sadly, that Alabama softball has suffered its first loss of the year tonight. They fell to number 4 Florida, 8-4. In Tuscaloosa in a game that did not count in the SEC standings, but it does give Alabama its first loss of the season. Arch nemesis, great rivalry. Coaching staffs are good friends. It's a friendly, healthy rivalry, but it's two of the best teams in the country, as evidenced by Alabama being 1-1 poll and 2-2. And I don't understand how they weren't 1-1 since Oklahoma finally lost the game last week, but those people who vote for these are non-coaches. The coaches poll is Alabama 1. The media and whoever else votes in it poll has Alabama number 2. But now Alabama has a loss. They fell 8-4 tonight, and again, they led 4-2 in the fifth. Errors and walks and all came to haunt them. And so Jackie Traina proved herself to be human tonight. Florida is a very good team. These teams will meet many, 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 many more times this year. No need to disparage. And here's some interesting news. I seriously doubt this is going to hold up. But any loss by Tennessee in basketball helps Alabama's chances. And Auburn has a 3-point lead over Tennessee with 2 minutes to go in the first half. I don't expect that to last, even though it is Auburn's senior night. And I just don't think the emotion will be able to hold on. Auburn has found ways to lose games all year, and they'll continue to do so. Now, back to Alabama basketball recruiting. You ask if there was a fast white kid in the offing somewhere, and I'm not going to compare this young man to Marshall Henderson, but Alabama is recruiting a kid who's a junior at Albertville. He is 6'7". He's a small forward. He's a great 3-point shooter. His name is Riley Morris. He's visited a couple home games this year, and Riley does have a committable Alabama basketball offer to sign this fall. Another in-state player with some Bama bloodlines, son of former Alabama offensive lineman Joe King, 7'1" center Isaac Haas, also from the Hoke's Bluff part of the world. These are two guys that Alabama is recruiting and recruiting seriously in the class of 14. The best player in the state in the class of 14 is the point guard, formerly of John Carroll, now of Winona, state tournament most valuable player, Justin Coleman. I had the chance to see Mr. Coleman play for the first time last Wednesday night, Bert. And Mr. Coleman has a game that is not unlike a guy that you'll remember by the name of Ennis Watley.
Oh, boy. Ennis can play
Justin,
ball.
Justin is very fun to watch. He's the master of the no-look pass. He's one of those guys that averages about 7 or 8 assists a game. But in certain cases, if his teammates had better hands, that number might be closer to 9 or 10. He can shoot the three. He's a phenomenal 3-point shooter. He can penetrate. Basically, Bird, if I were to describe Justin Coleman in one sentence, I would call him Chris Paul trapped in Antoine Pettway's body. Now, he's only about 5'9 and a half or 5'10. And Pett was listed at 6 foot for 4 years at Alabama, and he's not 6 foot to this day.
No.
But that's the kind of size and build that Justin Coleman has, but he's got the game of like a Chris Paul or even a young Ennis Watley. Just very, very fun to watch. Quick as a hiccup. Good defender. He can be at the front of your press. And let me tell you how hard Alabama's recruiting him. Anthony Grant has been to a couple of his practices. Dan Hipscher's been to several of his games. Grant's been to several of his games. Grant was there to see him Wednesday during the day before he left and flew to watch a junior college game for a player by the name of Algie Key, who's a junior college guy that is originally from Decatur, Georgia. And Algie Key is a combo guard, as I spoke of earlier. He is a potential member of this class that could sign in April. Then you have Ladarius Thompson, who decommitted from Vanderbilt and has now opened his recruitment with Tennessee and Alabama making a move on him. He's a point guard that could sign this April from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. But back to the 14 class, I just named who I consider the three best players in the state for the class of 14. The best player in the state for the class of 15 is a young point guard from Sparkman High School. And I just forgot his name, but just to let you know, Coach Grant struck up a relationship with him back in December at the Huntsville Times tip-off tournament, and Alabama's in good shape with him. And the best ninth grader in the state plays for Madison Academy. He transferred there from Lee at Huntsville and was actually held back a year in seventh grade. He should be a 10th grader this year, but he's a ninth grader, and he is just a phenomenal player. And Grant has got a relationship already going on with him, too. His name is Joshua Langford. He had a cousin by the same name that played at Auburn for a couple of years, didn't really have the greatest experience there. Although Auburn, he is in on Josh already. He's in the ninth grade, going to be a 10th grader next year, and already has verbal offers from Mississippi State, Tennessee, Alabama, and Auburn. And Coach Grant's had a relationship with him since the start of his eighth grade year. So the future is bright for basketball in the state of Alabama. Alabama's in great position for all the kids I just named. I'm not saying they'll get every single one of them. Arkansas coach Mike Anderson, a Birmingham native, has a previous relationship with Justin Coleman's family, so they have a shot at him. But he's been to several Alabama games. Grant's been to his practices. Grant's been to his games. He's recruiting him as hard as he can, kind of the way he recruited Trevor Lacy, which Grant went the extra mile to get him by showing up at a couple of November football games in Huntsville and standing on the sidelines while Trevor played his senior year of football at Butler High. So that's kind of what's going on in Alabama basketball recruiting. They do really intend to sign one more player, which will be a combo guard most likely. I do not know if it will be Algie Key or Ladarius Thompson. It could be someone else maybe. Those are the two names I keep hearing more. They do have two guys that signed in the fall period. One is a power forward named Shannon Hale from Tennessee by way of a prep school in North Carolina, and one is a 6'10 center from Greensboro who's Urban Dudley's cousin named Jimmy Taylor. I've scouted Jimmy also last Wednesday, and Jimmy is going to be able to help Alabama on the defensive end, blocking shots, rebounding, that kind of thing. His offense is, to put it kindly, a work in progress. So he won't come into the SEC as a big-time scorer, but he does have the ability to alter and block a lot of shots on the defensive end. So he'll be able to burn some minutes for Alabama next year. Shannon Hale, on the other hand, is a 6'8 kid who's more of a scorer, kind of a, what they call, there's a new term in basketball, guys. It's called a stretch four, and this is a power forward who can also make three-pointers that and stretch the defense, therefore the term stretch four, the four position being the power forward, and Shannon Hale is a stretch four. Rodney Cooper has had to play out of necessity the stretch four for Alabama this year, but Shannon Hale is a natural stretch four. So that's kind of my summary. I've only got a couple more minutes here, so I need to drop off, but that's kind of my summary of Alabama basketball recruiting as it stands.
It's great. Go ahead.
Thanks so much, Kerry. Before you drop off, we do have one caller. It's a good friend of yours. I think I recognize this number. Marty, you're live. You there, buddy?
Hey, yes, I am. Hey, good to hear Bama Bird back tonight. I tell you what, I've missed you, Bama Bird.
Thanks, Marty.
It brightens up the day when we get to hear your voice. And I tell you what, Kerry, man, he brings it every time he comes on this show. He brings so much knowledge to this show with recruiting. It's just exciting to hear that. You know, it's refreshing every time, and I almost go into withdrawals when I don't get to listen to Bama Radio. One question I want to ask, though, what's happened to the Alabama football players at the White House? Are they going to get the publicity of meeting the president, or is that just going to be, you know, just shoved under the rug?
That was supposed to actually happen today, but because of the storm coming in, they had to reschedule. And I think because of how the two schedules or how everyone's schedule works, Alabama is not going to be able to do it until after A-Day, which is mid-April. So it's going to happen. Just when it happens is a big question mark.
Well, at least they'll get the publicity out of it, I hope.
Oh, they're Obama. Definitely going to reschedule it, Marty, definitely.
Yeah, Obama will get his third Bama jersey.
I've got a little bit of football news for you, Marty, in regarding recruiting. Tonight, Alabama offered Carmel, Indiana, which is outside Indianapolis, wide receiver Austin Roberts. This just happened in the last hour. And then also North Gwinnett, Georgia, that's a team that's off of the Bulldogs. The North Gwinnett High School, Dante Sawyer, defensive end, is visiting Alabama this weekend and has named Alabama his leader. He's a class of 2014 four-star from the same high school that gave Alabama backup offensive tackle Austin Shepard. So there's a little bit of a football recruiting fix for you, Marty.
Well, that's great. Hey, I got one other question, too. What do y'all think about the four players that's kicked off the team now? How do you think that's going to affect Alabama in the long run?
None.
Won't.
They just reload, Marty.
You know, out of the four, I really looked at Reggie Ragland to be a force to deal with down the road.
He wasn't one of them. He wasn't one of them.
He's not one of them. Yeah, Reggie's not one of those kids.
Are you thinking Eddie Williams?
He might be thinking about Brent Callaway.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
Reggie's in good shape, bud. He's not going anywhere.
was Pitway, it was Callaway, it was Eddie Williams. What was the fourth one?
Tyler Hayes.
Tyler Hayes, the linebacker from Palmerville.
Yeah, Tyler Hayes is one I was thinking about. That's the one I was thinking about.
Tyler would have had a chance to be a starter down the road, but, you know, when they got Reuben Foster, that kind of put a dent in that. Not to say he might could have started opposite Reuben after C.J. Mosley graduated. It is possible that he could have been a starter year after next. I'm gonna give you that one. He might could have started in 2014 for Alabama and started maybe for 2 years. He was a pretty good special team player, aside from one offside against Texas A&M. But he was a solid special team player for 95% of the year for Alabama. So they're going to miss him. And Pettway was coming along, Marty. He was going to contribute on the defensive line, but I don't think he was ready to be a starter yet. I tell you, the guy to watch is Jeffrey Pagan. That guy's about to blow up. Y'all heard it here. And I'm going to tell you something else. A birdie told me, and I forwarded this in an email to some of y'all, but a birdie told me, Marty, that Xavier Dixon is going to get a look at defensive end this spring to kind of help out the pass rush, because they feel that that Denzel Duvall has come so far at the Jack linebacker that he's pretty much ready to start. So look for Dixon to get a shot at defensive end this spring to try to aid that pass rush a little bit. They say he's put on some good weight already just since the season ended. So that move doesn't really surprise me. The Jack linebacker at Alabama is a glorified defensive end, but they're talking about moving Dixon there full-time because they think Duvall is ready to start, and by start, I mean the Virginia Tech game.
Well, man, that's good stuff. I like to hear it. And I can't wait for football to start. It can't start too soon. Hey, guys,
also here,
appreciate it.
Cyrus Jones is going to get a look at cornerback this spring, Marty.
Marty, you might have heard the kickoff time for Virginia Tech Alabama has been set, and I believe it's at 4:30 on the
Central
day that everything
correct.
Spins up. Thank you, Kerry. I appreciate the backup on that.
Word.
Well, guys, I'll let y'all go.
What else
you
got, Marty?
I guess that's it for tonight.
When am I going to get my dinner at Top of the River?
That's for sure.
When do I get my dinner at Top of the River?
Just give me a call. You got my number.
I probably need to call you anyway. I've got a lot of experience in the telephone industry, and I'll be looking for a job April 1st. So I might be calling you about something else, too.
Well, give us a call.
All right, bud. Thanks for calling,
Bert.
Marty. Appreciate you, bud.
Bert,
thanks,
take
Marty.
It easy.
Yeah,
right,
I appreciate it, man.
Well, guys, I have really enjoyed this time I've been able to spend with you Crimson Brothers tonight. I hate that Blitz not with us tonight because I had a little bit of an announcement regarding our term we call ourselves before Horseman of the Bams Apocalypse or whatever.
The Bams Apocalypse. Right.
I think we've kind of morphed down a little bit to those four guys from Big Bang Theory. But anyway, it's okay.
I will be Sheldon any day of the week.
Well,
yeah, who's the one that's got the hot
one? Only one of them lives at home, Thomas. Actually, he did get married, though. So by default, on the later episodes, you can claim Sheldon if you'd like.
Yeah, lucky
that'll
me.
That'll be fine. But we'll go over all that on another show. The roles will be assigned by me. Since I came to the table late and I'm watching every conceivable rerun on TBS and TTO that I can find. Man, I've gone through about three-fourths of them already. But anyway, Roll Tide to both of you guys. I've enjoyed it. I'm going to go ahead and drop off. And I appreciate you having me again on Bama's Radio. I look forward to next week.
Kerry, you rock.
Great to have you, Kerry. Have a good one. Well, Bird, we have gone solid because everything broke for about 10 minutes. Why don't we take a little break? And I've still got Legend on hold, and we can go right into Legend Island, go for about an hour on that.
Let's jump right from the ocean right onto the island. I think we need a little sunshine in our lives. Let's cue up Legend, go to a break, and we will be right back on BAMS Radio.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. with Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left. With your hands on your hips.
I was doing the pelvic thrust.
Legend Island. Legend Island. Legend Island. Legend Island. Legend Island. Legend Island. The Mac Daddy of outlaw sports programs. If you want to talk Bama, Legend welcomes all Island members with open arms.
Even if they are painted orange with feathers. Join the ever-expanding crew of sports crazies who are regular visitors to the Legend Island.
Every Wednesday night.
Every Wednesday night.
Every Wednesday night.
Every Wednesday night.
On BAM's radio. And now, it's time for Legend I Legend I Legend I Legend I Legend.
Ah, welcome, America. Welcome. Welcome to Legend Island tonight. Good to be on with Thomas Watt and the Birdman. What's up, brother? What's up?
Oh,
hey, you know the definition of March Madness?
What's that?
A month without college football, baby. I'm having withdrawals, brother. I'm having withdrawals. Somebody shoot me up with some college football.
Oh, we're having a panel party nowadays, aren't we, Legend? I mean, you know. And by the way, you understand the karmic significance of this A-Day.
Yeah, this is an important A-Day. It really is.
It's 420.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Our A-Day. So 420 this year. So, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
All right. Hey, I heard you earlier talking about Anthony Grant, and I'm just going to go out and say it because I think Anthony Grant is a bust. I'm going to decide on the side of moron. That's what I'm going to do. This is a major disappointment. This is unacceptable at the University of Alabama. I rode this train. I got on board. Now I am jumping off. He has failed in so many areas, I couldn't even count the areas. This team does not lack talent, Bird. This is just a major disappointment in my view. I mean, they got the best point guard in the SEC, in my opinion. got good wing players. He just ain't recruited a big man. He did at VCU. Why can't you do it at Alabama? You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm just
It's ugly basketball, legend. And again, I'm this year teetering between, you know, just the slit of the wrist and, you know, canonizing this guy as they, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen a 6'7" Pope, Black Pope, but, you know, I mean, it's I'm at a crossroads, brother. I really am. I'm at a total crossroads with this team. I see a kid named Devontae Pollard that was a consensus 5-star kid coming out of high school that acts like he's never seen a frickin' basketball. I mean, and Kerry kind of said, well, it's because of the level of competition they played in. It's like, dude, he played in all the all-star games. He was in the McDonald's stuff. He was doing the 5-star shootout. He was playing against the best of the best. And all of a sudden, and I'm going to tell you right now, and this is Bird talking and nobody else, he ought to be a number two guard. Put him out there. Let him do, let him go all Magic Johnson on somebody. You know, handle the ball. You cannot stop a 6'6", 6'7" guy cutting through the lane. George Iceman Gervin. I mean, come on. There are tons. You know, let's name all the tall guys that were absolutely phenomenal at the two position that played in the NBA, starting with Michael Jordan. You know, that could also rebound and do, you know, were total guys. Magic Johnson. On and on and on and on. The kid has that kind of talent. Now, me, an overweight, you know, middle-aged fat man sitting in Bluff Park, Alabama, of course, you know, I'm not a judge of talent, but I'm going to tell you, he's been miscast. He's being misused. It's just it just boggles my mind how badly we are put together as a team. And that goes back on the coach because he's the one that recruited him in the damn first place.
Well, I mean, you have to – a basketball team, you have to – I've coached basketball in my day, and you have to base your coaching upon the talent that you got.
That's
right. I mean, Alabama's talent is basically on the wings and at the point. We have no talent inside. So I have never understood – this grinded out, bump and grind, set pick kind of offense that he's running down there. He might as well just go full court press, try to make as much happen off of steals, as much off of the press, get out in the open court. That's where Alabama excels, in the open court with Trevor Relaford. I mean, this team is basically acting like they got a 7-foot center that's dominant, and they come down and try to run some kind of pathetic half court offense. I mean, I'd rather watch paint dry than watch this team play offense.
They're trying to go high low. They're trying to go high post, low post, legend. They're trying to stick Moussa Gay up on the high post, and you know we're going to go back to old time boxing now, and it is truly is manos de piedra. That means hands of stone in Spanish. This is for all of our Hispanic speaking fans out there that listen to BAMS regularly. Manos de piedra. The guy cannot catch the ball, period. End of story. I mean, it just, I bet if he stuck a finger in his nose, he'd never find a booger. I swear to God. It just... Don't get me laughing. I'm on my soapbox now.
Hey, you're speaking the truth. This is the church of college football, but we'll preach some basketball up in here, brother. This is unacceptable. At the University of Alabama, we are better than this. We're supposed to be a dominant force in the SEC. We're supposed to make the NCAA tournament. Now, we might be dreaming if we ever talk about a national championship, but we're supposed to be in the Sweet 16 on a regular basis. This is unacceptable. And the thing about that, you've nailed it, these players are not progressing.
No.
I mean, I figured that Lacey, Cooper, Randolph. I mean, I figured these guys would take a major step from freshman to sophomore. And, I mean, some of these guys, I mean, like Randolph has went backwards in my opinion.
He let a white guy make him look stupid last night. See, he was the only way he stuck with
a white guy. A white man can't jump.
That Marshall Henderson Crenshaw, whatever that boy's name is, that little cokehead from up in Ole Miss, hell, he was three or four steps behind him on every play. He was quicker than Grease Snot, and Levi was like, "Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go?" It's like, no. And that's been basically the moral of our story the entire year. Living and dying in three-quarter time. Welcome to Jimmy Buffett.
I totally agree with you. This is unacceptable. It really is at the University of Alabama. This is unacceptable.
Let's throw it out to the listeners. I mean, you know, Thomas, I want you to weigh in because you are,
yeah,
again, one of the best minds I know. But, you know, what does the Bams Nation think? I mean, I'm not trying to stir any shit up here, but I'm going to tell you right now, Bird's not happy. I haven't been happy since the first preseason game, and I gave us a glimmer of hope at the first of the season, and then after Engstrom hurt himself, I said, well, you know, maybe they can coach Musa Gay up. By midseason, he's had enough touches on the ball, knowing that he was the main man on the court, that he just basically sucks. Musa, you are the tall Ben Eblen of the Bama basketball team.
And I have to say this about Kerry, and I want Thomas to jump in, but that dude can talk, man.
Hey, we just let him go. It's cool. Well, I love having Kerry on the show because I've spent so much time on football that I don't pay attention to basketball and other sports to the level I probably should.
You know what? And in all deference to Kerry, the guy works his absolute nuts off.
Oh yeah.
Going to basketball games and looking at these recruits, guys, and there is not a more knowledgeable and spread the word. To people that don't listen to BAM, say, you are absolutely missing a jewel every Wednesday night if you do not listen to Kerry Clark do his recruiting analysis of all the Bama sports, because the guy is locked. And he's also wired in with the coaching staffs.
The dude is unreal.
Oh, yeah. You know, and he's
– off the hook.
He's completely off the hook. But, okay, I don't want to dominate like Kerry did. I'll sit back. This is Legend Island. I'll be quiet. I just, you know, I haven't been on the show in a couple of weeks, so I'm like
no,
a pent-up.
No, dominate. You the fastest in college football. Take the house, preacher. Preach.
Woo, daddy.
Hey, you preach the truth, though. Somebody needs to stop saying another year. I'm ready to get rid of Grant now. This is ridiculous.
You know what? We need to go hire Bruce Pearl yesterday.
Come on. Now you're preaching.
Quit. I started to use the F word on the air. I'm not going to. Quit screwing around, Mal Moore. I'm going to send a copy of this to your office tomorrow. Get on the phone. Tomorrow, let's have another Bobby Petrino gate right here at Alabama. Let's go all Auburn on Anthony Grant. Let's go ahead and go behind his back and start talking to Bruce Pearl. What do you think?
No.
I agree with you.
No gate. No. Besides, he's got to show cause order. What are you going to do? You're going to have a punch-punch, wink-wink agreement for a year?
Had a listener in the chat room say we should have hired Bobby Knight when we had the chance. Amen, ma'am. Amen. Amen. By the way, Bobby Knight's available.
Yeah, ESPN doesn't want him back, which confuses me. He really knows the game.
Oh, you know why? Because he makes most of the announcers look stupid. I mean, he absolutely knows it so well that when he comes on, you know, did you hear him call the Alabama game, Thomas?
Which game was that?
Oh, my goodness. Help me, Legend. I want to say Mississippi State. Somebody out there that's in the chat room, give me a help. But he did a fabulous job, and he was making calls before the coach was making calls, saying, you know, he should do this, and why didn't he do that? And I sat there just leaning back going, this guy has forgot more about basketball than anybody either – behind the scorers table or on the sidelines at the coaches' benches will ever know in their entire lives.
But, yeah, he'll be available. But I'll actually take up for Anthony Grant a little bit. And, you know, I'm kind of eating my own little crow because I've jumped all over him, particularly after the LSU loss. But he's had some bad injuries. The Engstrom loss is bigger than...
Come on. I don't mean to interrupt you, Thomas, but Carl Engstrom, no disrespect to Kerry, ain't a 7-7 guy.
Well, Engstrom is certainly better than the defensively challenged Nick Jacobs and the offensively challenged Musa Gay. And
I don't know.
I would be willing to bet money on that. But his hallmark at VCU was he wanted to run people out of the gym. But you really need a kind of deep bench to do that on a consistent basis. Otherwise, the guys are playing 35, 38 minutes a game, and they're running up and down the court. They're just going to lose their legs. It's one of the heavy leg teams. Let's make an NBA metaphor. Look at the Lakers. The Lakers want to do the high-low run-around Mark D'Antoni system, but they're simply too old and worn out to do it with consistency, and occasionally teams like the Young Nuggets or the Young Thunder are just going to run them out of a gym. Well, you can do that in college, too. If you're only going 5, 6, 7 deep and you want to run, you'll win a lot of games doing it, but there are some games where you will look just putrid because you simply don't have the legs for the game. So I understand what Anthony Grant is doing. I will be interested and really, really hope next year is a lot better because they'll have some post-depth. And if there's one thing that will definitely settle the question in my mind, it's what post players Alabama has if they progress at all. You know, Nick Jacobs needs to get some more defensive intensity. The kids that are coming in need to have a presence because – Alabama's guards, if you stack up Alabama's guards against anybody in the SEC, just on pure star ratings, they're as good or better than every other group of guards in the SEC at minimum. So I just that part I don't understand. But this year I'll chalk up to an injury bug and, like Kerry said, not roster mismanagement, but just some unfortunate circumstances that were kind of beyond Anthony Grant's control. But can I say, am I happy? No. Do I think Bruce Pearl needs to get a call the instant his show cause order goes away if this happens again? No, I think he deserves a call immediately, and he deserves a lot of money thrown at him because guess what? There's this fella by the name of Nick Saban. He works in the complex. He's won a couple of these crystal ball things in the past couple of years. Good Lord knows that he's given that athletic department enough money to just drive back the dump truck up to Bruce Pearl's house and be like, here, have this. Go get us to a Final Four.
I'm going to make one comment about your soliloquy, and this is going to bite you in the butt. But you made the comment out of Anthony's control. As a coach, you control everything or you're not the coach.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I like what Thomas said. I like what Kerry said. But y'all two tell me if I'm wrong here. I mean, you start four guards. If you're going to start four guards, you got to be an up-tempo team. The very fact that you start four guards is an indication that you cannot play the same kind of basketball that most teams are going to start two big men and three guards or three big men and two guards. So, and then your strength off the bench is basically guards. You got the guy I can't pronounce his name.
Obasahan. There you go.
You got Andrew Steele. You got Pollard, who I agree with Bird is being mispositioned. So you got three guys that you can rotate with three guys. These are young guys. Go full court press. Go up tempo. Rotate your three guards. Play Relaford, the guy I can't pronounce his name, and play them together some. Use Pollard in the press. The guy's an athlete like crazy. I agree with Bird. I think Pollard might be a secret weapon if they just let him loose, you know.
Yes. Well, you know what the hell? I don't. It's beyond me. I think he's so structured with his system. And again, from the chat room, I've got to put this one out. The comment was, I was praying Grant would at least watch the replay and listen to Bobby's input. You know, whenever Bobby Knight called the Arkansas game, it was amazing to watch the expertise. Just you know, relaxing on the sideline. I mean, you could tell he was not intense, but he absolutely knew the game. And I think Anthony is so structured with his system. And I'd like to sit down with him over dinner some night, because I'm a hack when it comes to basketball, but I know my stuff. And I would like to ask him, why did you do this and why did you do that and why didn't you do X, Y, or Z? Because I'm at a loss. I don't understand the makeup, the physical tempo of this team. I don't understand all the above. I mean, it just is absolutely beyond me. So,
yeah, I agree with you. I mean, this guy needs to learn. He needs an offensive coordinator.
Yeah,
if only.
The legend tonight to come in and OC the basketball team.
If nothing else, keep him pumped up, you know. I mean, Anthony's so droll on the sideline, and you know he's just churning inside, but he just doesn't have a whole lot of emotion. And I really would. I'll go back to a comment I made when Kerry was pontificating earlier. Anthony needs to get real Southern Baptist on one of these referees' ass, because too much – in fact, with Ratine Obasahan last night, there was a foul that was one of the most flagrant fouls I've ever seen. He got his clock clean. There was not a call. There wasn't an eye blink, an eye wink, a jam, a wham, a thank you, ma'am, none of the above. And Anthony should have basically called a timeout right then and got those stripes and said, let's look at this. Because how could the three of you son of a bitches standing out here getting paid, by the way, good money from the SEC, miss the same thing that 11,000 people in this Coliseum saw, and about, you know, maybe all of, 500,000 people sitting around on their televisions around America. Give me a freaking break. He needs to pull a John Calipari. He needs to pull, and even if he gets thrown out of the game, it would send a message to the team, and it would send a message to the SEC, and it would send a message to the Stripers. You sons of a bitches, you're not going to get away with this home court crap that you're pulling. And I'm not taking anything away from, because I think we lost the games, period. It wasn't because of the refs. But I think that we, as a team, i.e. Anthony, does not do enough to ride herd on those guys and say, I'm watching you, and I'm going to call you out, and I'm going to call you out, and I'm going to send you to the office, because you keep pulling this crap game after game after game, and it's just enough is enough.
Well, let me jump in, and I have to agree. Honestly, it is okay for a head basketball coach to occasionally get thrown out of a game, going off the deep end, trying to protect his players.
Or just get teed up, Thomas.
Exactly. I don't even, like, I understand exactly what you're saying with the whole send a message to the referees and the SEC office and all that. I don't even care about that. You want to make your team as tight-knit as possible. You want your players to know when you say something ridiculous that they have, like, you have their back. So I know when I played basketball and I got a bad call and I wanted to just jump the refs when I was 13, I would play, and my coach would do the same. I'd be like, yeah, my coach gets it. My coach knows I'm pissed off. I'm going to go out and I'm going to play really hard. Well, the psychology here is not magically different. I mean, you see it every day in college basketball. Someone gets a bad call, and there's this "what the hell do you mean" look on the kid's face. Well, what's the kid going to do? He's going to get the "what the hell do you mean" look on his face, and he's going to look over at the bench, and what's he going to see? Is he going to see a coach just sitting there, you know, hand on chin, kind of thinking, or is he going to see him, you know, wildly you know, gesturing.
Go all Nick Saban on somebody.
Yeah, you know, and
I'm serious.
No, and I agree with you. You know, an occasional technical foul is not a bad thing. If you lose on a technical foul, I mean, yeah, you'll get that sometimes, but how many games are you going to win because the coach gets a tee, they you know, they get the foul shot, or and if it's any kind of luck, that the coach will get to chew the refs out because it'll be one of those four-minute media timeouts. And instead of scared strategizing, the coach is just going to chew on the refs. Those players, you can just tell them, go jump and get the ball, and they'll go do it. So for every time you'd lose a game, you'll probably win two because the players will just be like, all right, I've been playing basketball 20-plus years of my life. I know what I'm doing. Let's go do it. And they'll do it with intensity and heart, and they'll figure out a way to make it work in many cases. Basketball is a game where you can do that.
Can I give you the Bird recipe for success in the tournament?
Shoot.
This is easy. I'm going to go out and get Chance Womack, and I'm going to put him in a basketball jersey.
And the NFL is going to freak out, but go
That's
ahead.
That's okay. He's only got to play three games. And you know what? He's not even going to play a game because he's going to go out and I'm going to take whoever the biggest, best man that they got on whoever team we're playing, and I'm going to tell Chance. And both of you guys, Legend and Thomas, you're way too young to remember this, but this goes back to the John Wooden days. There was a young man that played for Notre Dame named John Shumate. And at the time, UCLA, with Bill Walton as the center, had not lost a game in like 44 games. It was something ridiculous. And Notre Dame put John Shumate, who was easily gave up 4 inches to big Bill Walton, easily. He was 6'8", 6'9", maybe. But John walked out first play of the game and absolutely just cold-cocked Bill Walton. I mean, he hit him so hard in the face. He saw Tweety birds and stars, and there were leprechauns jumping out of hats and shit all over the place. Well, you know what? Bill Walton never stepped in the lane another time that entire night. It was an Saturday afternoon game. I'll never forget this. And the commentators, it was on ABC, Wide World of Sports, Jim McKay, they were just aghast that, you know, the great Bill Walton had been, I mean, bloodied his nose and he had him big old poofy lips after he got cold cocked, but he never got in the lane. I would do the same thing with Chance. I'd say, that's their big gun. That's the guy that's getting 18 points a game. He's 6'9". He's going to play down here around the post, cold cocking, and then get thrown out of the game. Go ahead and just get ejected. And you know what?
Yeah, Alabama lacks that player too.
We would have some fun in the tournament at that point, because then it's like, and then I just let Moussa Gay come in and give a hard foul, you know, after Chance Womack came in and just absolutely poleaxed somebody. Then I'd let Moussa come in and give a hard foul, where they understood that if you come in the lane, if you try this bull crap that you're, because we're getting out muscled, let's face it. And Nick is not a small guy. Nick Chapkis is not a small basketball player by any stretch of the imagination. Neither is Moussa Gay. Hell, Moussa Gay is 7'1". But at that point, it would be offensively, it would completely upset the universe of the other team. And it would blow up the other coach's head. So, you know, let the Bird go down there. I could be their secret weapon, Legend. I could sit down at the end of the bench and say, Coach, let's drop the big one. Let's put the Chance on them.
You still got some eligibility left. I have faith in you.
Anyway, sorry for the history lesson, guys. That was, I've seen it. I've seen a lot of ball over my years, and there are ways as a coach that you can outmaneuver the other team, even if you don't have. And this is where I go back to your comment, Thomas, that things that are out of Anthony's control, I call bullshit on that. As the coach, everything is under your control. Injuries, so what? It's all under your control. Everything. So,
okay. Just to explain your point to me, how do you stop a kid like Charles Hankerson, Trent, like leaving? How do you do that if they've got their mind made up?
But you mean me?
You know,
go ahead.
He hasn't recruited. a solid inside player. Really, he hasn't recruited a president since he's been at the University of Alabama. He hasn't.
I think you would have been surprised if Engstrom hadn't gotten hurt. I think he had a shot to be there.
I would be surprised. I would be.
I would have been surprised.
It would be like seeing the Red Sea split. I would really be surprised if Kyle Engstrom turned into a great player.
You know what? Really, if they could have got legend, if they could have gotten 8 points and 6 rebounds a game. I mean,
Bird. You're a man of faith.
I'm with Thomas. All I can do is like Easter bunnies and great pumpkins and crap like that. You know, just hope against all hopes that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. But I'm also a realist, and I saw Engstrom play last year, Thomas, and I know that the natural ability and talent. There's only so much you can teach a kid that if you just ain't got it. You ain't got it. He had a big body. I think he had a real sweet disposition. I think he had a good work ethic, and all those account to be a C to C minus player when you're playing against teams in the SEC. Maybe not this year, but usually.
Yeah, the SEC is putrid this year.
Eesh. And I feel like jumping off a bridge talking about Alabama football, basketball. Here's a question. Bird, give me a couple teams that can win the whole thing. We got March Madness to look forward to, even though Alabama ain't going to be in it.
You know what? I said it last year, and I'll say it again this year. I don't think there's going to be a dark horse out there. I think that there's no such thing as a dark horse in the tournament. It comes down to coaching. I think Gillespie's team has got an outside shot. I think Duke is a legitimate contender. I think Indiana is anything out of the Big Ten. Right now, you go 6 teams deep in the Big Ten, and any one of those teams can catch a hot hand and beat you. I think Louisville has got an outside shot. There you go. You know, 6 teams deep in the Big Ten, and then Florida outside, Louisville outside shot, Duke an outside shot. Add to it, Thomas. What do you see? Am I here all by myself?
No, I'm with you, Bird. Thomas must have fell off.
Nah, you probably had to go to the bathroom. Let me see. He Skyped me. He said, be right back. I'm peeing.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, no.
Pee break here on the island. Talking all about basketball, and we're taking a piss.
On the island. If we're talking about teams that can win the tournament,
yes.
I like Louisville. I like a defensive team, an actual defensive team that will swarm and create chaos.
That's quick.
Watching their game against Cincinnati, it was really this past, I think it was yesterday, it was like a tale of two halves. Cincinnati played Louisville close, and Louisville just finally decided, oh, I'm just going to, we're going to play defense now. And they outscored them like 44-14 in the second half.
And who coaches Louisville?
Rick Pitino.
Oh, it comes down to coaching. You guys are going to hear that through the entire tournament. You're going to look on the sideline, and the winning coaches are going to be the guys that make the big salaries.
Uh-oh. I like Louisville. I think Duke, because what's his name, who scored 36 against Miami over the weekend, is coming back. I think that really helps the inside-out game because Plumlee down low is a force, and now you've got to really cover the perimeter for the Blue Devils.
And you got Coach K on the sideline.
Yeah. And the last one, who I never count this team out, even though they're one of the least talented teams you'll ever see, just, you know, pound for pound, Michigan State. Tom Izzo is probably the best college basketball coach around, Coach K included. It's close there, but Tom Izzo is unbelievable as Michigan State's coach.
How about KU? Anybody give KU a shot?
No.
If he is dominant, maybe, but I don't know. The Big 12 has not had a very good season in my mind, and I don't pay as much attention, but KU hasn't jumped ever. I haven't seen a KU game where I'm watching. Like, oh my God, this team's really good.
No, it's you know what, I would have to say that if you know, and I detest them. I detest Louisville. Growing up an old Memphis fan, Now there's a team that could maybe dance on into the Sweet 16 or even the 8. I'm going to say, watching the Memphis Tigers, and I watched them play last night, Memphis is starting to come on. Now, you know what their problem is? They've got a half-wit for a coach.
The guy after Calipari?
Yeah, he's just not there. He's just not there as a coach. And I watched some stuff last night that, you know, they had a three-point lead, and then one of the kids fouled, you know, with like 9 seconds left, the other team outside the three-point line, put him on the line for 3 free throws, and they should have, could have tied it up. Of course, he clanked the first one, so they're only down by a point. And then on the inbounds pass, there's 3.2 seconds left, which is all you have to do is keep the, you know, you've got the ball. It's your ball. You keep it on your end of the court. You don't try to go toward the other team's basket, so to speak. You know, it's just stuff like that, that when you've got a double timeout and they're trying to ice the kid on the free throw line, you're pre-coaching the next dadgum play and what happens if I have the ball or I don't have the ball. And either the kids don't get it or he doesn't know what to say, and I don't think he knows what to say. So even though they're playing pretty good ball, the thing that will keep them out of going deep into the tournament, and I call it deep, Sweet 16. You make the top 16, you've done something. The Elite Eight, then as far as I'm concerned, you've had a terrific season. Final Four, it's the best of the best. But just to get to a Sweet 16, those are the best teams in the country. But I'm with you guys. Big Ten, wow, that's some basketball being played up there. I mean, any given night, they'll put a thumping on your head. And that's Minnesota, you know. And I like Tom Izzo. I'm with you, too. I at one time didn't like him, Thomas. Now I've come back to no matter what he's got on the sideline as far as players, he's going to be competitive. They're going to play good basketball. Now the surprise to me this year, we're talking about favorites. Who are some of the big disappointments? And I can think two in the SEC right now.
Well, Missouri has had an up and down season for absolute
sure.
They're
not a disappointment though. They're gonna go somewhere.
Yeah, they're gonna go.
How about our friend Mike Anderson over at Arkansas?
Ain't that a disaster?
God in heaven! I one
can't
time
win a game on the road.
Thought he was one of the best coaches in America with his style of basketball. You know, went from UAB and made them a semi-contender, as truly one of the crap hole programs anywhere in the country. Went up to Missouri, made them a total contender, and then made the jump to Arkansas, where they've got a pretty good pretty good plate of talent they can pick from. And it's a
traditionally strong program.
Yes. They've got a fine basketball program at Arkansas, and that's been a total disappointment. And the other one is our buddies up here in Kentucky. Would anybody have foreseen? Well, you know, I'll take him off the hot seat, but because he is expected, because Calipari every year is expected to come in and produce, you know, a championship caliber team. But my God, he lost what was it, legend? 6 players to the NBA last year. I mean, you know, they played for him 1 year, and then they were in the NBA. I mean, you just can't take hits like that and continue and build any sort of longevity in a program. That's why all these white guys that play 18 years for places like BYU and, you know, out west that, my God, are 30 years old, you know, they played together since they were little kids. They get in the tournament, and they do really good. And you go, wait a minute, you guys aren't athletic superior, but they're a better basketball team. There's no I in team.
I agree with you. And this might be a year that a Gonzaga or a Butler cuts the nets.
Yeah, because of the solidity factor. Exactly right. I mean, the NBA, when you pull kids out, you pull, you know, they've got the talent to play in the NBA. Bottom line, guys, you know, it hurts your program. And you have a stellar player like a D. Rose, a Derrick Rose, leave your program. It's going to kick you right in the nuts. I mean, but again, that's on the coach. The coach has got to fill those holes.
And I actually, let me jump in for Calipari. He had a ton of players drafted, and Nerlens Noel blew out his ACL, you know, in the middle of the season. So it's been basically an unmitigated disaster for Kentucky this year. The good news is for Kentucky fans that is that there are – Calipari is always going to bring in top recruits, and not all the players that came this year are going to go to the NBA. They're not physically ready.
No.
And so next year Kentucky will again be back in it. So that's – Kentucky's an interesting case study because of how Calipari is – in that it's a borderline NCAA tournament NIT team this year. Next year it could probably be a Final Four team. And to a final point about cutting down whoever's going to win the title, this is one of the more wide open years you're ever going to see. There are probably about 15 teams that could do it. There is no Kentucky from last year where you're just looking at them and they're like, oh my God, if they put this together, they're unstoppable. The only team that's even close to that is Indiana. And Indiana just lost on senior night with the Big Ten regular season Big Ten title on the line. They got beat, and they got beat pretty good by Ohio State on their home floor.
Yeah.
So the arguably best team this year, they're not – to say they're trending down is not fair to the program, but they're certainly not trending up. So you can take
I think it's the overall quality of that league this year, though, Thomas. I think undisputably those guys can walk around with their finger in the air saying we're number one because the talent and the level of coaching is so superior in the Big Ten, it's not even funny. Again, you can go five or six teams deep in that league, and any of them on any given night can be anybody on any given night.
Well, I
agree with you. I really like Indiana, though. I think this might be the year of the Hoosiers, even though they got beat the other night by a very good Michigan State team. Ohio State team. That's a team to look out for, Ohio State. But for some reason, I like Indiana this year. I think Indiana's got a complete team.
There's something magic. I don't know what it is, but and I may – you know, after we actually start the tournament, get past the conference tournaments and get into the actual NCAA tournament, you know, I may be eating these words, but you can just sort of feel Louisville's one of those teams. I'm with you, Thomas. There is something indelible about that squad this year, that a mental toughness, I don't know what you want to call it, but plus it's the coaching. It's that coaching thing. So it's going to be fun to watch. I'm missing my Jim Calhoun, Coach Calhoun, you know, with UConn. Missing him, Coach C, man, you know, one brother to another brother, the birds shouting out to you. I know you listen to BAMS every Wednesday night to try to get up some brush up on some basketball. So,
have you seen? You know, you mentioned Jim Calhoun. Have you seen that the NCAA might be getting themselves in more trouble because there's apparently a HIPAA violation involved in that investigation surrounding Calhoun in 2010?
I hope so.
I hope those
inept bunch of boil sucking ass kissers in whatever town they're out of.
Indianapolis.
Yeah, Indianapolis just crater and go away. I hate the NCAA. They let Auburn off the hook. They're still letting Auburn off the hook. There is a boil in my butt that they can pucker up and suck anytime they want. Screw you, NCAA, from top to bottom. Emmert, you suck.
The story goes in 2010, there were proven illegal benefits given to a UConn player, and Calhoun got a couple game suspension and UConn lost a scholarship or two. But what's interesting is the way the NCAA found out about it was through the people that did the surgery on the kid. And the kid is on record saying, I never authorized them to do that. So there's some pending potential litigation where at least the medical group could be under scrutiny and potentially the NCAA could be under scrutiny too. And some of the people I work with down at the law firm I work at, they're HIPAA people. You don't mess with HIPAA. That's just – you don't do that. So I think it could be another batch of egg on the NCAA's face, like they need any more of that right now. But just an interesting story that since you brought up Coach Calhoun.
I like it.
We're
well,
going
guys,
all over
we're
the
down to the last 10 minutes. We've talked basketball nearly the whole hour tonight. That's a miracle on the island.
We didn't even have a flip. on Bam's radio, that's for sure. Typically, I mean, we've got a whole bunch of football we talk about. I don't know how we've refrained this evening, to be honest with you.
And all we've really got is the mock draft stuff that we talked about a bit ago. So it's kind of a downtime. I don't want to call it. It's kind of a slow time for football, which is weird.
Yeah, it just means I need to get off my butt and start getting some guests lined up so that we can have some scintillating Q&A and repartee with Bam's banter as the season progresses and we do our countdown to 420.
Well, as next week will be interesting, and just a preview, NFL free agency will have started, and one of the probable former Bama players that will move will be Rolando McClain. He's kind of pissed the entire Oakland Raiders organization off through some of his antics.
He's pissed off the Bama Nation, too. He's embarrassing us.
Well, there is that, but he will
What's
probably
going
be
on? I have heard this.
He has not left the hood behind. Let's put it that way, to put it mildly. Rolando still thinks that he is driving one of those stupid cars that have been spray-painted out of a can with a little bitty tiny rubber tires on them, the great big 52-inch rims, you know, with the fuzzy dice hanging in, and he's got a gold tooth.
And then on the football field, he just will argue with coaches and has been shown to have a pretty bad attitude. So he's just kind of – he hasn't taken to the NFL very well. In his defense, it's not like Oakland is an extremely stable situation, but the best thing you can say about his time in Oakland is he's made the worst of a bad situation, in my mind. God, the Raiders are a disaster.
Well, and it's like the black hole of Calcutta. You know, you can be a great player and play for Oakland and all of a sudden just slide into the abyss of nothingness with your career. So, but he's done it to himself. I mean, the off-the-field antics and some of the crap that he's pulled, I think that is part of the issue with Rolando and what's gone on with his current employer. So he's, he didn't get a full 4 years. And we talked about this 2 or 3 weeks ago, if you remember, Thomas. Kerry brought this up during one of the BAMS episodes that we had prior, that he didn't get a full 4 years under the Saban mind meld. And he's been kind of a wild child. He's not left the pimp behind in the hood. You know, he's not grown out of that.
Oh, well, I don't really feel sorry for him. He's made more money than I'll ever see. So if he wants to blow it, that's his choice.
It's the gold tooth syndrome.
Yeah. But, yeah, even without Alabama players, there will be some interesting free agent stuff. I'm sure we'll get into your Steelers and Blips Packers to some extent. It'll be a good show. So
yeah.
There'll be much more football next week, I promise.
Well, who knows what will happen, and we'll pick up a tidbit along the way, a crumb of information between the four horsemen of the Bampocalypse. We are always out, you know, with our nose to the ground, trying to come up with the scent of a good story for the Bama Nation. You know, there's not even a good scuttlebutt. I mean, I'm asking people, yeah, you know, the guys are out working and everybody's working and we're just being hard at work. And it's like, yeah, but there's got to be some intrigue. Isn't some coach's wife diddling the quarterback or something? Come on. We need, you know, we've got to have juice.
The most intriguing thing that came out to me in terms of football and rules and whatnot, Dennis Dodd published something, the CBS sports guy, that basically bitched out everybody not named Alabama. Because with these new recruiting rules, a lot of people are in a big old, you know, just big old tizzy about how it's even harder to compete with the elite schools. It's not fair. We're having to do more work. And Dodd basically said, you're not Alabama. Why should we make you, Maryland, be like them, Alabama? That's stupid. But now in response to all of this tizziness, the NCAA, who scaled the rules back, is now going to look at putting some of the rules, changing them. They've changed them once. Now they're going to put them back to the way they were this recruiting cycle in some cases. And I'm just like, really? You don't even know if this isn't going to work yet. And because people are complaining, you're going to change it? Give me a break. And I do understand the NCAA's position here. I've been very vocal about questioning these rule changes. But at the same time, you got to give them a chance to, you know, actually matriculate through a recruiting cycle before you go and change everything, because some groups think it's not good for a student athlete, when at this point, if you honestly defend the concept of student athlete, I kind of think you need to have your head checked in terms
absolutely.
Of just in terms of just not living in reality. I'm sorry. I'm a big fan of the student athlete concept. I think it's a fabulous concept, and I will defend it on this show to all comers. But I also realize that the student athlete concept, because of insanity done by the NCAA, is functionally dead. Just pay the damn players at this point.
It's absolutely. It's a complete farce, and it's a joke. And I actually have heard people condemning the Fab Four, as I call the kids that had the made some bad choices 2 or 3 weeks ago on Alabama's team. And they get a free education. How can they be peeing? I want to say, you're an idiot. You are such an idiot. Number one, you're in school. You have, you know, the fraternity guys are all driving around in BMWs and brand new 4x4 pickup trucks. You know, their daddies gave them. And, you know, you're down there on a lick and a promise with no pocket money. You know, these guys are all squiring chicks and, you know, living the high life. And you're getting three meals a day and it's quote-unquote education. And there's some equality to that? Kiss my butt, man. It's like, you know, the kid has got to have some coin that he can basically take a check out and maybe have enough money to afford a car. You know, come on. Give me a bloody break. So it's just we need to get out of the bubble as the collective we, as sports fans, as the NCAA. And you know what? Understand where these kids come from and then come to a happy medium and put some money in their pocket. You know, here's what I've always said. Take part of the money from the T-shirt sales and all the tens of millions of dollars that the universities get by putting a number 10 on a jersey and selling, you know, a million number 10 jerseys. And then putting some of that off in the side, and when the kid graduates from school and does 4 years at the University of whatever, you know, based on the playing time, they've got a graduated scale. But even if you're one of the kids that's a, you know, a bench warmer and you never see a game, but you're out there at practice for 4 years and been a tackling dummy, that you end up with maybe $40,000 in your pocket when you graduate out of the percentage of the slush fund that the university enjoys. And excuse me, guys, for preaching, but, you know, I think I could fix all this if these numbnuts would just get out of my way and let me do it.
No, I think you're right. Preach on, please.
That's good stuff, brother. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Well,
man, I've enjoyed it.
Well, it's been fun. You know what, guys? We're right at the end of the show, and this God, legend, it's been too long, man. It's promise.
I've loved it, man. It's been good to be back on the island with you brothers.
I hear you. We got to promise each other that we will be doing our thing next Wednesday night, BAMS Radio, Full Tilt Boogie. Spread the word, spread the love, and spread the message.
Oh, our boy Danny Shannon said he'll come on right before March Madness and do a March Madness special with us.
That's awesome. Is that going to be next week? Because doesn't March Madness start next weekend?
I don't know. I think we're still about a week and a half away, if I ain't mistaken.
So it could be it could be the show after this coming Wednesday night then. That's cool. And you and I still have got to do a road trip down to Mobile, Shanghai, Rock Watts, and do a little lunch with Dan the Man. So we've got our annual Danny Sheridan give us all the stuff that he can't talk about on the air around the roundtable secrets.
Yeah, and he said any time on the lunch thing. Probably might be good to get down there before the madness on the lunch thing.
Awesome. Well, let's talk off the air then. Guys, it's been fun. Legend, take us out of here. You got something purdy for us to listen to, Thomas?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I got
hey, this. We love y'all here at BAMS. This is your March Madness connection. We love y'all. And even if Alabama don't make the NCAA tournament, we still got 15 rings, baby.
And on that, everybody have a good evening. Catch you next week on BAMS Radio.
Oh, I love it. Walter Cronkite.